We go to the North Webster Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline to the man who always has a precedent set. He is one of the best friends we have of the program. We sadly made him wake up probably a little too early. He is Doug LaMaurice of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. I'm still technically asleep, so it's okay.
Well, that's fine. I'm in the same boat. We're still working our way to a week.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's start with this. So Josh Fields has been approved through the transfer portal, which still sounds like something that should come out of Star Trek, and yeah, is now going to be a part of this team. What does this mean for the Buckeyes, Doug?
Well, I mean, Ohio State fans should be excited, but yes, the news officially came down yesterday, but it was always going to happen, you know, and he wasn't going to come here. Ryan Day wasn't going to talk about it. Tate Martell wasn't going to leave unless he was going to be able to play in 2019. So it's sort of like breaking news. Justin Fields is going to play for Ohio State. It's like, yeah, we knew. They just had to officially figure it out. So, you know, what it means is that they have the number two recruit in the class of 2018 as their starting quarterback next year. And so I'm trying to, like, tamp down some of the enthusiasm because he hasn't played college football, really. He just got here. Dwayne Haskins had 2 years in the program before he started, and Ohio State all last year talked about how important it was for Dwayne Haskins to have that foundation in the offense, and he would not have been ready to start in year two, and now they're going to start Justin Fields in his year two in college. So he's a huge talent. Throw, run, leading offense, five-star guy, huge talent. But I do have some questions about, like, him getting himself ready to play for a team that, as always, should be at least in the discussion for a national title.
It's going to take a minute for him to get used to it. I mean, it's a similar offense to what, you know, he was used to in Georgia and that stuff. It's still the spread concept. It's still all those different things. But you're right. There's going to be a learning curve that comes with it. So does that kind of pave the way a little bit for Tate Martell to actually have a chance to run this team, or is he officially into the transfer portal to be beamed up by Scotty to beam his way to another team?
Tate? Oh, Tate's gone, baby.
Tate's gone. All right, that's what I figured.
Tate's transfer to Miami is official.
All right, Scotty beamed him up already.
Well, I take that back. Well, no, I don't take it back. His transfer to Miami is official. He does not yet have a waiver to play at Miami. He's trying to get the same waiver that everybody wants now, which is you don't have to sit out. But he is a member of the Miami Hurricanes. It's just a matter of will he be able to play in 2019 or will he have to sit out in the traditional transfer route for a year.
So who is looking to be the starting quarterback for the Ohio State Buckeyes right now?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Every coach in college football always says they want four scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. That's the ideal quarterback room. And ideally, it's like you have four guys stacked up, one per class, right? And it's very hard to get it to work that way, especially when your players are good, because then guys don't want to come in behind and sit. Guys transfer. You end up reaching for grad transfers. So they have two guys they like and then a third guy, and then they don't even have a fourth guy. So the third guy is a guy named Chris Chuganoff. He transferred last year from West Virginia. He was like the fourth string guy last year. He's never going to play, but he's the third guy in the room. If they have two injuries, he's the quarterback. But if he ever plays, they're in trouble. Then the other guy besides Fields is a guy named Matthew Baldwin, who is from Lake Travis High School in Texas, which, as you know, produced another quarterback, right?
Right. I don't know who. Oh, Baker Mayfield.
Matthew Baldwin is from Baker Mayfield's high school, and that is a powerhouse in Texas that has a long tradition of producing guys who at the very least succeed in college. So he was a late addition to their class. He redshirted last year. He tore his ACL his senior year in high school. Before Ryan Day went down and grabbed him, he was going to go to Colorado State. So he had offers from, like, Dartmouth. So, you know, I'm a little hesitant about Matthew Baldwin. A lot of people think he's going to be really good. And as we remember, Baker Mayfield didn't have a long list of offers when he came out of Lake Travis, and we saw how that went. So some people like Matthew Baldwin. I don't think it would be ideal for Ohio State to play Matthew Baldwin early in his career. So it's a pretty thin quarterback room, actually. If something would happen to Justin Fields, you know, like if he does what Francisco Lindor did and it has a hurt calf for 2 months and can't play, that would be bad news for Ohio State because they would be down to a redshirt freshman coming off an ACL who was going to go to Colorado State and a grad transfer they never want to play. So it's thin, but the guy at the top right now is a five-star recruit that a year ago everybody in America wanted.
Oh, Doug, but it's okay. I think college quarterbacks that go to Baker Mayfield's high school are like guys who've had cups of coffee with Sean McVay. Like, it's all going to work out. They're going to be great.
Oh, yeah. It's gold, baby.
It's all gold.
Yeah. No, everything's good. He's got the bigger juice. And then the other thing, too, is Ohio State's five-star freshman receiver in this class is from that high school, too, Garrett Wilson. So there's a lot of Lake Travis juju in Ohio football right now.
That's all you can ask for. That's all you can ask for. Doug Lamaurice of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer joining us on the hotline. All right, so let's switch to the pros for a little bit here. So they had the coordinator press conference where they basically had it where it was almost like speed dating. They had them come in, sit down, talk for a little bit, and then leave. Then the next one came in, sat down, talked for a little bit, and then leave. What did you take from these press conferences?
I didn't watch them.
Good.
I'm sure they're fine fellas. I read our coverage of them. I read that the people in the room asking questions seem to be impressed by the guys answering them. And you know, I mean, I think the bottom line, right, is that it seems like they're all real NFL coaches. And the thing that's, you know, to think about a world where Hugh Jackson in year two didn't have an offensive coordinator because he said, if the offense is bad, I don't want the coordinator to get blamed for it, so I just won't have a coordinator. And then in year three, he had a guy that he hated so much that they got each other fired halfway through the season. So, like, the bar on coordinator relationships in Berea is very, very, very low. So to get three guys in who have NFL experience, and I think Steve Wilks, especially on the defensive side, Freddie Kitchens is going to turn over half the team to him. I think this happened in a lot of things. But he was good at what he did as a coordinator in Carolina. He was a hot name. He got hired in Arizona. He only got 1 year, and he got fired. And then sometimes you give up on guys like that, and it's like he's still the same guy that when he was in Carolina, everybody wanted. So in the end, the Browns end up with a defensive coordinator who only, you know, a year ago was one of the hottest defensive coordinators in the league. And I don't blame him for having 1 year where they lost in Arizona as a head coach. I think Steve Wilks is, you look at what Wade Phillips and Brian Flores and Bill Belichick did in the Super Bowl, a defensive coordinator that in big games can scheme stuff up to shut down good offenses. Steve Wilks maybe he's probably just as important as Freddie Kitchens in determining whether this Browns team is a playoff team in 2019.
Well, yeah, because it's this evolution in coaching staffs that has taken place. I mean, these head coaches now, they quote-unquote oversee, but we all know that there's really one side of the ball that they're exclusive to, and whoever they end up hiring as a defensive coordinator is essentially the defensive head coach, and essentially is running everything himself. So when you get a guy like Wilks, who has the track record he has, plays a little bit of a different style of Greg Williams, but still plays it out of the 4-3, it's a win. It is 100% a win, and the best quote that came out of it, Doug, was that Steve Wilks said, this was my first choice to be here.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to say that. Like, he could have just went, yeah, I'm here, this is what we do. And Cleveland typically is like, yeah, I'm here, it's what we do. You know, it'd be great opportunity. They got Myles Garrett. Why not? Steve Wilks made a point to say this was choice numero uno for me. And I think that's huge, man.
And I will say, I'm not sure there's a world where he would have said, this was my fifth choice.
Well, that's true, too.
Choices 1 through 4 didn't work out, so here I am. But I know what you're saying. I believe it is real that Cleveland is now becoming a place where guys want to go because guys want to win. Guys want to win, and people employed by the NFL see the same thing that you see and I see and all the fans listening to this see, which is a team that clearly is on the cusp of competing, maybe not even on the cusp. Maybe they're right there competing. So I think it matters hugely, and I think there's reason for fans to be enthused. And you know, again, this is a process of building an organization. You know, a year ago, John Dorsey was saying they didn't have many real players here, and that was a lie at the time. They had real players. They just needed a few more of them. But they got real players, and now they've got some real coaches too.
It all seems to be falling into place. I mean, it's hysterical. We have gone from, you know, 365 days ago, we were all sitting back and saying, God, can this just end? just let it end. Can we just forfeit the last three games and call it a day? And now we're all sitting here going, like, can football start tomorrow? Like, you know, yeah. We're all now looking at this Alliance League going like, maybe that could hold us over for a little bit. But can football now start tomorrow? Because these Browns look good and Baker is fun and he's at the forefront of all of these commercials sitting next to Tom Brady and holding his Super Bowl rings. How can you not be excited?
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, this was the point. I mean, like, I can't bring it. Yeah, this was the plan. This is the whole thing. I mean, even when it stunk, I at least thought, well, this is very possible that this is what's coming. And so, you know, I just think there's a lot. Cleveland continues to be a ridiculously interesting sports town, I think, because the worst thing you can be is mediocre. And even when the Browns stunk the last couple years, they were stinking with the purpose, and I think enough fans saw that it was interesting. The Cavs are now almost going into Browns mode, I think, with what they may be getting ready to do in completely tearing this down to try to get picks and bring it back up. The Indians are still trying to compete, and you know what? I think there's going to be a world eventually where the Indians get to the point that the Browns just went through and the Cavs are now. But at the moment, they're still trying to compete. If Cleveland can get this right, where you're in a world where you're either trying to win it all or you're tearing it down to build back up to win it all, and mediocrity is never acceptable. You're either going for it or you're sucking it up and rebuilding. I think that would be a great place for fans to be, and I think the success of the Browns being where they are now really could be a blueprint for fans to understand that this is a good way for franchises in Cleveland to operate.
Is that a good thing, Doug, that it's that your best bet is to either end up at the top or in the toilet? Like, is that really the best way that these sports teams should be?
In the world that we live in, I think it's...
I know, it's a hard question. I've been debating it all morning.
in an ideal world, you'd compete every year, right? In an ideal world, you'd always try to make the playoffs, but Cleveland, I do think it's a little different for Cleveland because Cleveland wants a championship. Cleveland has competed, right? I mean,
yeah.
The whole, you know, yes, the Cavs championship was great, but their teams have been there. You know, the Indians have been there and been close, and the Browns, you know, it's not like they were never good. I mean, everybody knows the history of 25 years ago, what was going on. So I think there is an all-out championship mode for teams in Cleveland still because everyone's still waiting for the Indians and the Browns to get one. So maybe if you're in a world where you've won some championships, so you can live in a world where, you know what, we're just going to try to make the playoffs and that's okay. But I think it's okay in Cleveland right now to still be, maybe not even more, I think it's necessary. I think the Indians and the Browns in Cleveland still should be championship or bust, because forget about the but. They've been mediocre. The championship, whatever you have to do to get a championship, even if there's pain involved, I think that is the right plan for Cleveland for now.
I think you're right. I mean, that's you're looking at it the same way I am, and it's why this Francisco Lindor injury just bites. It's a gut punch, you know, because we were all so excited for spring training and the start of the season. And okay, it's 6 to 8 weeks. That's spring training, but it's just another gut punch to add to the list of gut punches the Cleveland Indians have given us so far this offseason.
So you've been talking about this all morning, you said, the kind of thing? Because I'm
kind of, sort of. I mean,
my Sunday column. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to write for my big Sunday column.
Oh, you should.
I might do this now.
Take it, man.
Gave me an idea.
Oh, it's yours. Take it, man. I mean, it's the great conversation that's been floating all over the place. You know, is this really the best way? Is there a better way we could talk about, you know, the best way right now with the system we have in place is to just go into the toilet and use that to build it back up to the championship. And you're seeing Major League Baseball now talking about rule changes where they're going to stop rewarding teams for going completely to the bottom and want to put in like a salary floor and actually penalize them. I mean, I grew up a Milwaukee Bucks fan. You know, I'd pay attention to the Bucks. That's long left me. But the problem I always had with the Bucks was that they were a mediocre team and Herb Cole wanted them to be because that way people would pay attention. But the arrow was always pointing downward for that Bucks team, and they would end up being the 8th seed or the 6th seed and then get the tar kicked out of them, and we'd go into the next year and then be the 8th seed and the 6th seed and get the tar kicked out of them. So it's just, you know, it's a weird spot, and I don't know if it's great for these sports, man.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, like, right now, like, if you're a Browns fan, would you rather be the Bengals? Like, right now you feel like the Browns are on the way up, right? And the Bengals are still kind of like, eh, we're not exactly sure. But, the Bengals made the playoffs a couple years, but they haven't ever won a playoff game with Andy Dalton. You know, they've been around, but they've never really been much of a Super Bowl contender. So what would you take? What six-year stretch would you take, right? If especially if the Browns, say the Browns get to a Super Bowl, would you take – 5 playoff appearances in 8 years and no, never even reaching the AFC Championship game? Or would you take like 1 playoff appearance in 8 years, but it gets you to the Super Bowl? I mean, fans kind of have to answer that for themselves. And it stinks to have a whole year where you don't want to watch your team on TV and you don't want to go to the games because they're not competitive. But man, parades, baby. I think cities are different, but I still think it's possible, and maybe we'll get to a point in 10 years where if the Browns have a Super Bowl and the Indians have a World Series, where it won't be so championship at bust, where competing every year can be a reasonable goal. And of course you want to win, but we want to compete every year. Maybe Cleveland will get to that point, but I think right now it's titles.
Not telling you how to live your life, brother, but I would totally read this column.
Yeah,
I would be, I would be all in. I'd be all in.
Yeah.
All right, so plug the next thing that you're doing here. So you went down to Alabama and checked out the city that Freddie Kitchens grew up in and all the people that he grew up with. What'd you learn from that trip?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I know Freddie Kitchens now. And I will tell people that when this 5-part series is going to start on Cleveland.com on Monday – I did talk to Freddie Kitchens about all this stuff. After I got back, I talked to Freddie Kitchens for a while and got his perspective on all the things I learned about him. So I think we're all shaped by our families. We're all shaped by our communities to varying degrees. It feels like to me, and not just because I'm writing a story on him, it feels like to me that Freddie Kitchens is really a product of his family and his community. Maybe more than most, maybe more than a lot of people. And I will tell you one of the specific angles that's going to be a separate story is that when I was in Gadsden and Etowah, Alabama, one of the things is sometimes I think when you're up in Ohio, it's like, I'm going to Alabama. He's from a town in Alabama. You think, oh, maybe it's a one stoplight kind of thing, right? Like a little Alabama town. He's from like a metro area. It's not, they have a Chili's. You know, they have a mall. It's not a little Alabama town. So there's stuff going on there, and it felt, and he said this, but the comparison between his hometown and Cleveland, I think, is real. There is a vibe. There is an ethos. There is a way that people talk. There is a way that people think that I think is real. And a point that I've been making is if Cleveland fans somehow feel like they have a connection with Freddie Kitchens right now, just from the introductory news conference or just from the way he talked, the way he led this offense for 8 games. And I think, man, I'm sort of feeling it with Freddie. Why is that? I hope this series next week will explain why you feel that, because I think it's very reasonable that you quickly feel that, because I think Freddie Kitchens growing up in Alabama is a lot like a lot of the people out here in Northeast Ohio who are following the Browns.
That thing starts on Monday, Doug?
It does.
Perfect. He's Doug LaMaurice of Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Read that whole thing that he's going to have coming, the 5-part series, all on Freddie Kitchens. Thank you for getting up, man. I appreciate it. And take it easy, and we will talk to you down the road.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you, man. Take it easy. He's Doug LaMaurice of Cleveland.com. Check that out. He's got the first little chunk of it out right now, the teaser part of it. You can catch on Cleveland.com, and he'll release it all throughout. He's always a good read. He's Doug LaMaurice.